Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the war room of the O'Keefe Think Tank, this is Real Spoilers episode 143. Yeah, you know so, what? Yeah. Now I'm thoroughly spun around because I've been remembering like the movie episodes are even, but now since we did the box office report, so this is the behind the show magic that people get exposed to when they listen. So we'll go around the table and we'll introduce ourselves.
This is Dan.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. There. Whew. And we have guests this week.
Hey.
We have our first ever celebrity guest on the show.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Really? Who?
So,
I didn't hear about that.
We're just warming the mics up for the famous people coming in.
So so this would be the part where you can introduce yourselves.
I'm Frank Conniff.
I'm Trace Beaulieu.
And you know them from Mystery Science Theater 3000. You know them from Cinematic Titanic. And now you know them from their new movie riffing project called The Mads, right?
Yep. The Mads. That simple.
Yep, we're barnstorming the country, riffing bad movies just like we did on Mystery Science Theater and Cinematic Titanic, except it's just the two of us now.
Right. So, and you're in St. Louis. By the time this hits, you'll be out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
But you were in St. Louis, so you were kind enough to stop by.
Well, we're in St. Louis through the kindness of yourself.
Like, exactly.
We'd be here if it weren't for you, so
thank you
for that.
And hopefully you will kindly let us leave as well.
It was kind of a one-way ticket thing.
Yeah, it's like when the studio's in the basement, it starts to feel a little dicey, doesn't it?
Oh, we got to do a Kickstarter to get us out of
time. I got the computer. I'll just create the Kickstarter while we're doing
this. Yeah. So just real quick at the top of every show, like we like to do for the regulars, it's a shameless plug. Don't forget that we are available on iTunes, so you can go there and rate and review and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. It helps us tremendously. We actually had someone say that that they only listened because they saw how many reviews we had and that they were positive.
Gadzooks.
How about that?
That's a good word. That's a word you don't hear anymore.
Well, it's because we're the old guys.
That's
on
the
show.
Yeah.
We say things
the
old
timey
like,
sound effect goes
like gadzooks and dag nabbit.
Gussied up.
Yeah. And we buy things like gingham.
Is that really an old timey name?
Not
anymore. That's, I mean, they had that song like 5 years ago.
That's gingham
style.
Although I want to know what gingham style is.
Yeah. What did you think that song was about?
I had no idea. Like I have no
Joe
clue.
Joe is so hip with the kids.
Yeah.
I'm super gingham hip. Style.
Gingham style. Yeah.
Like a scene from Shane. Just came to town to buy some gingham.
Yeah, just please. Just
pick up
some
the
gingham.
Gun. So, anyway, so the movie this week, is there something else I should plug? You're looking at me like I forgot something.
He always looks at you like that.
That's true.
Yeah. No. The disapproving look. Yeah. League of Show Sharers, you did.
League of Show Sharers. I didn't look them up this week, so sorry you didn't get mentioned, but we'll get you next week.
Okay, there you go.
So, this week, we're going to do a Real Spoilers Rewind.
Yeah.
And we dug into the vault, and we pulled out...
We dug into the vault.
We pulled out a pretty crappy movie.
Yeah,
subtly titled Santa Claus, the movie.
By the people that brought you Superman.
Superman, the movie.
Now,
sensing the theme?
Yeah. Did they name it the movie so you wouldn't confuse it with the man?
I guess.
Now, is this the movie or actually Santa Claus that I'm putting
maybe
into my
VHS
player?
Maybe they were afraid, like, when you were going to the mall to buy your ticket?
It just works better for some reason than Santa Claus, a movie. Doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah. Although I probably would have been kinder to it. It'd be like, well, it was a movie.
Yeah. Look, it knows what it is at that point. Yeah.
It was on film. That counts.
Yeah. It was in color, so that's a good thing. So this movie from 1985. Starring Dudley Moore, of all people.
Yes.
In that brief window when people thought Dudley Moore could open a movie.
Well, was that a thing? He could open a movie.
For a little while. Yeah.
The thing about Dudley Moore that's kind of interesting is him being a movie star, it was just a total accident. You know, it was like a fluke because the film that made him a movie star was 10, and he only was cast in 10 because George Segal walked off the set. Like on the second day of shooting or something like that, had arguments with Blake Edwards. I think he had a drug problem at the time. And so they desperately needed someone. And Dudley Moore, he wasn't a movie star then, but he had been in Foul Play.
Foul Play was kind of where he popped up on people's radar.
Yeah, well, he kind of made an impact.
The radar in America.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Bedazzled, I think, is probably the best film that he's been
well,
in.
That's the thing about Dudley Moore is he's this great figure in comedy. I mean, with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore and Beyond the Fringe
and
Bedazzled.
Pete and Dud.
He's a great, you know, a great talent. And him becoming a movie star, and because he did 10, which was an accident, and then right on the heels of that, he did Arthur
yeah.
which is the most perfect casting
yeah.
ever. He is so brilliantly hilarious in that movie. And so, but then after that, there were just a lot of films that he starred in that weren't on the level with 10, which he's also great in.
Right.
And it's also a really good movie, I think. And
he fell into that romantic comedy. He was doing, like, Unfaithfully Yours.
Yeah. He did a lot of stuff like that. And it, you know, a varying quality. And Santa Claus might be maybe the worst one of that period.
I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah, I would like to put in for Best Defense.
Yeah.
Ooh, oh, Best Defense, yeah.
I was like,
is that
yes?
the one with Eddie what is the Murphy?
Defense? Yeah, Best Defense was Eddie Murphy and Dudley Moore, and they were never in the movie together.
So it was like Godfather 2, where it was like Pacino and De Niro.
I was like, minus the awesomeness. Yeah, I was like, but that movie's great. So other than that, it's just like... The premise of the film was that Eddie Murphy was operating an experimental tank. And Dudley Moore was the engineer on the tank. And so it takes place at two different times. And so you would see Dudley Moore fighting the government to get the tank.
That's what I think of when I think of Dudley Moore.
Sure.
To
get the tank made properly. And then you would see Eddie Murphy in combat using the tank as things would go wrong with it because Dudley Moore would lose a particular battle at the... Not corporate level, but government bureaucracy level.
Yeah. And how did they pitch this? Because it sounds great.
These two stars, but don't worry, they won't be in the movie at the same time.
The guy from Arthur and the guy from 48 Hours, I think, is how they got pitched. And I remember Eddie Murphy, when he hosted SNL, it was on the heels of Best Defense, and he was like, yeah, they wanted me to come back and guest host SNL. And he's like, I made 48 Hours. And I'm like, I'm not doing your damn show. And then he's like, and then I made Trading Places. And they asked me, I'm like, I'm not doing your damn show. And he's like, and then I made Best Defense. And he was like, what time would you like me?
That's pretty good.
But
this one, you know, though, even though I haven't seen Best Defense, I still think Santa Claus is worse.
I think you're right. It is worse. But I just wanted, because of the grand spectacle, it's amazing. Right. Like, they thought they had a huge movie.
Well, the pedigree is wonderful.
Right.
You know, the producers of
the Salkinds.
Yeah, and Huddleston and Dudley Moore and kind of falls apart.
The screenplay by David Newman, who co-wrote Bonnie and Clyde and co-wrote the Superman movies.
Yeah. You know. Yeah.
Big hit from Sheena Easton.
Sheena, he wrote that.
In the film.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, Santa was taking the morning train.
Yes.
Well, it's, you know, they went...
It was his Sugar Walls.
That's a different era, Sheena Easton.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But it's a big production. Like, I was really impressed. This is the first time I saw this movie, and I was amazed at...
And
like,
the last?
Certainly. I mean, I can't write the... Well, I'm going to write the feature. It's not happening.
I had to watch it in, like, chunks. where I was like, okay, I gotta.
Yes, me too. Yeah. 20 minutes in, and I go, I can't watch this.
Yeah. And I can't. I was like,
yeah, I put it off till last night, so I had to.
Yeah. He was cramming for his final.
It's like eating being forced to eat a giant novelty candy cane all at once. It's just too sweet
and
treacly.
That's the best way to describe it. Yeah. Well, they spent $50 million on this movie, which
in 85.
In 85.
It was obviously meant to be a big blockbuster movie like Superman. You know?
Yeah,
it looks
like it too.
And I think the thinking behind it was, you know, Superman was a big hit, and it's this iconic character. Who's more iconic than Superman? Santa Claus. Okay.
Don't wear red.
Yeah.
Oh, man. If they would have...
They could fly.
Gone with Jesus.
They were so ready to do Jesus Christ the movie.
They're this close.
Oh, yeah. It's extremely religious movie, aside from being sickeningly treacly and awful.
And but extremely creepy reindeer.
Yeah. It's like, why have they brought the whole Jesus mythology into the Santa mythology? Yeah. It's like, what's going on here?
Because it worked for Superman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I guess let's start at the beginning. We'll throw it to Joe because he normally does our synopsis. We just kind of walk through the movie beat by beat, and we'll probably do a little beating of our own. Mm-hmm. In a clean way, this is why they call you Creepy Joe.
Didn't say anything. I didn't say a word.
You didn't have to.
If you guys wouldn't have said anything, nobody would have known.
People could hear the face you were making.
Just keep the finger on the chicken.
Yep.
Button.
Yeah. And they felt awkward.
Yeah, they felt. And now I feel awkward.
As well, you should.
Damn it. Okay, so this starts off. I honestly don't remember how it starts.
There's a little bit, yes. These people in a village.
Local Santa Claus at that point. Yeah. Santa Claus. He's like, lives in some small village where it's snowy, and he brings toys for the kids, and then he goes to bring toys to the other kids, and he gets caught in a snowstorm.
He's a hobbyist Santa. Yeah.
And then it becomes spiritual, although I can't explain how.
My wife's theory is that when they stop in the sleigh and they're overcome by cold, that they die. They actually did die.
So this is better.
They're ghosts?
Yes. And after that point, they're brought into hell and forced
to act with Dudley Moore.
Yeah, act with Dudley Moore and to bring toys for the children.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'd watch that.
Because it's like 1,000 years. And
there's a huge gap in time.
Well, when Burgess Meredith, we'll get to what he gives a speech about how it works.
Right.
And he's like, time travels with you until all the toys are delivered. And
so
it's
does
like,
that mean that time... So
that sounds like a hellish existence.
Yeah. So my understanding in that is like, so he takes off Christmas Eve, right? Mm. And time stops.
Yes.
And he has...
Yes.
However long it takes
until it
gets
to
make
all
it across the entire world.
Fortunately, he's only flying over Manhattan and parts of New Jersey.
For us.
Yes.
Yeah, fortunate for us that we don't have to see the rest
He can't clock out until the job is done. It's the opposite of union work.
Yeah. He's a slave. He's a slave to the old band, Burgess Meredith, old Obi-Wan man.
So what we're referencing is there... He's going to become the Santa Claus that we know and love.
Right. So they get in a snowstorm. I thought the reindeer were going to eat each other.
That would have made the movie better.
It's Blitzer and Donner party.
No, he's...
I've been waiting a week to tell that joke.
I bet you have.
Come on.
But can I mention... Like,
doesn't
I'm glad
he
you...
split open one of the reindeer and push...
He crawls inside.
Yeah.
They smelled bad on the outside.
How creepy were these reindeer? Like, well, they were the worst...
The animatronic reindeer?
Yes, the animatronic reindeer.
They clearly expensed some real reindeer at some point because they had to use that massive set that they built.
That's
They're
true.
Like, I don't know, run some reindeer around this thing.
I will say... Donner's eye... Like every time he tried to like look behind him, I was like, don't do that. Like, don't
that,
show that.
That was the breaking point for you?
No, that was pretty early in the movie.
Here's a little piece of trivia that I don't know that you know. Donner was played by Peter Falk. Because of the weird eye?
No, I got it.
Okay,
yeah.
I was making
that. You
clear.
Make a Columbo joke? Is that what we're going
to
do?
I love to reference my old TV.
That's true.
Why didn't you go for Moisha Diane if you were going one-eyed guy?
Oh, see? Now you're in trouble.
I know.
They're
going to bring the heat.
They're going to start schooling you here in a little bit. Yeah.
So what was really weird was that, like, okay, so Santa liked to deliver these toys. It was really nice of him. His wife was, okay with it. They get trapped in this snowstorm, and then they're basically... put into slavery.
Right.
And like, I don't, they didn't really have a choice. They were just like, yeah, you're immortal now and you're not leaving. This is your new home. I'm like,
trapped in a soul store. By the way, they didn't really put much effort in bundling up. Like when they came to, I'm like, did you guys not cover up? Because like, we all saw
chilly.
Like they're just kind of laying there like, oh, what happened?
None of them had mittens.
No.
Frostbite.
Could have gave that away.
They're dead. Yeah, they're dead. So they end up, he ends up making all the toys, and then we've, like...
Well, I think we should talk about when you see the North Pole, when they take him there. Like, they spent... This is my favorite part of the movie, and my favorite is with a lowercase F, just to be clear.
Yeah.
But, like... I remember seeing this as a kid, and like the first 20 minutes or so, I'm like, hey, this is kind of cool.
30 minutes. I watched the clock.
Yes. Yeah.
It's exactly. There's a 30 minutes of this origin, and it's good. Like everything about it.
Because that set was expensive.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of this is left over from Superman. Like, it looks like the Fortress of Solitude.
It does look like when he goes there, it's the Fortress of Solitude.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, well, like, the Salt Kinds are notorious for being cheap. If you know anything about the Superman 1, Superman 2, Richard Donner cut, Richard Lester. It's a complete debacle.
Well, the big thing that before they made Superman, and they couldn't get away with it when they did Superman and Superman 2, they had to tell the cast that they were making two movies, which they didn't do
for the Three Musketeers.
With the Three Musketeers, the cast showed up for the premiere and realized that they had made two movies for the price of one, and they were all pissed. I don't remember if they got a payoff or not, but it was very underhand.
Yeah, they realized you don't cross Oliver Reed.
Yeah.
Did Richard Lester direct that?
Yes.
Yeah. That's where they brought him in for Superman 2, I guess.
Yeah, he directed both of the Three Musketeers. And I believe he directed parts of Superman 1, as did Richard Donner directed parts of Superman 2.
I gotcha.
But Richard Lester got credit on Superman 2, and Richard Donner got credit on Superman 1.
That's a weird story.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if you look at that set, like it's initially when I saw that set, and I was like,
when they're going through the toy shop and stuff, there are these like really like long slow pans where you could tell that the producers were like, you will show every goddamn inch of this set. We spent
I don't care how you do it. You're going to do it.
But you're going to.
It was impressive because, so having not seen the movie, I thought, okay, this is going to be terrible. So I wasn't wrong. But I'm just like, it's going to be low budget. It's going to look really hokey. And then they get to the North Pole and I'm like, what is this budget? The production value is crazy.
Also, I got the sense during that scene, the first scene at the North Pole, and then all of the elves are kind of dancing around. And I was proud of myself at the end because they didn't show the credits until the end. And listening to the music, I guessed that it was Henry Mancini.
Yeah.
And then it was. But it really, though, at that point, it really seemed like it was a musical that they didn't bother to write songs
for. Absolutely.
And it's like
The Hobbit.
It feels like the movie would have been well served being a musical.
Yeah.
You couldn't have heard it. And might have made it a little better if there had been songs in it. But it seems like at that time they didn't think musicals were commercial. But it really, a lot of the scenes were like, oh, he's going to break into a song now. And he never does.
What was that? There was a Nick Nolte movie.
I'll Do Anything.
It's
actually a movie I'm very fond of.
Where they had filmed it as a musical
and then
cut all the songs.
Really?
Yeah, that was James L. Brooks movie. Albert Brooks is in it. It's quite good, I think.
Yeah. I've never seen it. I just remember the story about
they previewed it and it had songs by Prince, it had songs by Carole King, but it was like Nick Nolte and Albert Brooks singing them.
What's the worst that could happen?
Can we just get a remake of that now with Nick Nolte? Because
and Julia
that
Roberts
could be awesome.
No, you're thinking of the Woody Allen.
Oh, no, you're right.
But I would love to see that version. But James L. Brooks has said a few times he's never going to release it.
So no one's ever seen the songs.
No one's ever going to see the songs.
Okay.
It's the day the clown cried of musicals.
Yeah, but not as close to that.
But nothing like it.
We're pretty much going to a fast forward over centuries of time.
I guess we should talk about when Burgess Meredith showed up. You can't not talk about Burgess Meredith.
That's before
Yeah, because he lays out the rules.
He
comes out with his entourage of beard carriers.
They're like
UFC fighters, the way they have his hair wrapped around their fists.
But there was a lot of them.
That job sucks. Yeah. So this elder elf, I guess, walks out, and I'm looking at him, and I was like, that's funny. That guy kind of looks like Burgess Meredith. And then he starts talking.
And then he said, wow.
I was like, it is Burgess. Like, what are you doing in this movie? And then again, I'm like, what is anybody doing in this movie?
I struggled from the beginning when Santa started speaking, and I'm like, oh, my God. Because I just kept hearing the Big Lebowski in my head. So I was like,
and he's in Hudsucker Proxy too, right? Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about this movie too, is it has really good people in it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
David Huddleston is great, and he's good as Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. And Dudley Moore. But that's part of what's depressing about it, is like you have Dudley Moore there, and it seems like they could have just had,
Yeah, it wasn't written for his strength.
Right. They could have had comedy writers come in and build and create scenes with him and the other elves and build up some comedy.
Yeah.
And they just didn't bother to do that.
It's so depressing because you expect something brilliant from Dudley Moore, and then you get this bland
It's very bland, yeah.
I was surprised at how little of Dudley Moore being Dudley Moore was in this movie. I mean, he just didn't really do his thing, you know. I expected him to Dudley Moore the place up, and he was a really reserved
subdued.
I'm just like, this could have been anyone in the role.
Gave him all the elf jokes.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
All he did was puns, but it's like anybody could have played that role. They didn't need Dudley Moore other than for a name, because he brought nothing to it.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, watching it, it's like, you know, this would normally have been populated by little people, and these were more like people in the 4 to 5 9 region.
I wonder if
they started with Dudley and then they went, nah, everyone else is too short.
Yeah, I couldn't tell, like, if that was, like, gracious on their part, like, if, like, hey, somebody finally didn't just go hire a bunch of little people, and they did more short people, and... Or if they were just lazy, like
afford. Yeah, you know, those actors are. I don't know if it's a specialty category with SAG or something, but yeah, it was sort of.
And,
yeah,
I'll tell you this: I've never had to hire little people for to be in a movie, but I have this fetish. No, when I was in radio, they got this idea of they wanted to do this big, huge Christmas promotion. And so they wanted, I was tasked with finding little people to play elves. And so I called an agency. I'm like, here's what we're doing. And I'm like, I need like 6 little people. And they quoted me a price. And then I said, here's what I'm doing. And then the price tripled. And like, they're like, oh, they're playing elves. Go elf yourself. Like, that's better than any of Dudley Moore's elf puns.
Yeah, you're an angry elf.
Yeah. So when you're exploiting them for being little people.
But they're
people,
like, if you want us to play elves, it's going to be more.
If you just want them to be actors, it's one thing. But when you're like, oh, this is because.
Yeah, what I think they look at it too is their busy season.
Yeah.
And they just got to
make that money.
Premium, right?
That's the only time of year they're going to get hired to play elves.
No, that's true.
Yeah, I guess if you're hiring Peter Dinklage for the station agent, it's one price. Yeah. If you're hiring him to play an elf, it's going to be a little...
He wasn't an elf in that movie.
In the station agent?
No, that was his... There were no elves in the station agent.
No,
I think you're
start
getting
over.
Confused.
Start over.
So, you're thinking of the Polar Express station agent.
Oh, you're right, I was. That's what it was. Yeah. I got that confused. Yeah, that's the sequel.
Yes. That only exists in your head.
Correct. Right. Burgess Meredith shows up and lays out our rules for Santa.
Why would you, like, Burgess Meredith at this point, I mean, I'm not saying he's an A-list actor who can open a movie.
85,
but
we're post-Rocky.
So he certainly has had something of a career resurgence.
Yeah.
They wanted a name. He's on the poster.
Uh-huh. Is he really?
Yeah, he's got, like, 8 lines. Like,
God.
Yeah, but he's got a huge beard.
I don't think he
brought that to the role.
It's almost like Gene Hackman in Young Frankenstein. Like, until somebody's like, yeah, like, I watched that movie a billion times, and finally when I was like 15, I was like, that's Gene Hackman, and nobody told me that Gene Hackman was in this movie.
I didn't realize we were obligated to notify you.
Yeah, well, you were when I was 15.
It's a hyper-specific request on your part.
That's very common of the Salkins, I think, is like Superman, for instance, is like, well, we can't get a star. Although I think they pursued people like James Caan.
There was a lot. It was like James Caan.
But so their whole thing was like, well, we have to have a big movie star, so it's so we get them to be in the supporting roles, but we pay them. Like Marlon Brando got, I don't know how many millions of dollars for like a week of work.
It was like the most expensive, like, you know, it was the the highest paid actor ever.
It was like $1 million
point.
A minute. Yeah.
And same thing with Gene Hackman, who's playing the supporting role of the villain, which now, you know, big movie stars actually do that all the time now, you know. But I read somewhere, too, that the part that Valerie Perrine played in Superman was... They went after Goldie Hawn, and she almost did it, but I don't think they paid her quite enough. So they their whole, you know, that's the same concept with Dudley Moore. It's the movie's not about him, but he's a name person.
They wanted like name actors to add credibility to what they were doing. Like that's one of
the stuff on the poster.
and they love those posters with all the looks like the poster for like what Airport would do that with all the
Towering
actors
Inferno
and, like, George and, Kennedy and
of course
he's the only guy that was in all of them, right?
Yeah.
George Kennedy was on all the airways.
Maybe that was the problem. Get him off your plane. Get him out of your building.
Well, he would play different characters, though.
Yeah, but just keep showing up.
Like in the first one, he's like a custodian, and by the end, he's flying the damn thing.
Yeah,
it's like it's really weird.
It's he moved up in the company.
I guess.
Yeah,
it's kind of like my
American
murder
dream.
It's kind of like my Murder, She Wrote theory. What you're working on. My Murder, She Wrote theory is that she was killing all those people, that she's a serial killer.
Easily.
I mean, every week you're finding a dead body.
Well,
and it's like an arsonist who sets his own fires.
Yeah.
And then solves it.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, yeah, you dumb cops. You can't figure this out.
Here. I also have a theory about how Casper the Friendly Ghost is actually an aborted fetus. Is that too much?
Oh, sure. I mean, you've already said it. Why not just keep going with
it? That's the ghost of Richie Rich.
Yeah, that would make sense, too. But he doesn't have, like, fully formed fingers, and he's got the little thing on his head.
That's
it wasn't
true.
Done baking.
Boy. Hey, speaking of reproductive issues, how there are no women at Camp Elf.
Right.
And it's like they don't, like, eyeball Mrs. Claus. You know, they just
they eyeballed her.
But it's hard to tell. They're right at level, you know. Like they're right eye level with the ghost.
Did they reference that they couldn't have kids? Was that a reference point?
They couldn't, just that they didn't have kids.
Yeah. Oh, okay, all right. Because you know, there's a thing at the end of this movie where it's like, all right.
But even though I thought David Huddleston and Mrs. Claus's scenes were very erotically charged.
Well, there was a scene. I mean, I seriously thought there was going to be a sex scene when they're both in bed. And
you thought that?
Yes.
Did you literally think that?
Did I literally? Yes. He's like, I don't want to get out of bed or whatever. And she's like, just stay in bed. Do you remember that?
The problem is sexually is he's Santa Claus, so he only comes once a year.
Damn it.
And that's down the chimney.
Ta-da!
Very good.
Scratch that one off your list.
Yeah, I know. Son of a bitch. It's the last time I bring in professionals.
That was good. That's pretty good.
Yay.
So, yeah, Burgess Meredith lays out the entire plot where it's like, you're going to go out, when you take out your sled, time stops.
Right.
And you have... However long it takes you, you won't age. However long it takes you to deliver all the presents to the good boys and girls of the world, or Manhattan and Jersey, whichever we only see.
No, and time stops completely, not just for Santa.
Right.
Everywhere.
Yeah, the whole thing
all
stops.
All time is paused while he goes around and delivers.
Unless you count all the people who are still talking to him.
Correct.
So does So Claus World shuts down. All production stops.
Well, I guess I always I think of Claus World as
what's
like
a holiday?
The bubble.
Or that is that still part of
his
thing?
Yeah, that's
thing,
part of the
so that
thing.
Keeps going. So it's 1,000 years for the
For the elves, too.
Workers.
Yeah.
God, the overtime on that would just have to kill you.
Well, that whole building was structurally, I don't know how this works. Like, when they opened up the roof and let all the hot air out, it was like, well, that was great.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks. Now it's freezing in here.
We just heated this.
But my parents taught me anything is you always close the door because you don't want to heat the outside.
Right.
Yeah. That was always my dad's favorite. You're not trying to heat the outside. It's like, no, of course not. You dummy. Like, it's impossible.
Just the part around the door.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't want to get cold. So... Then we do a flash forward where we go through centuries of
living hell.
Of, yeah, of Santa Claus delivering presents. And then we get...
represented by the same children holding slightly newer toys each time.
Like, was it really the same kids?
Oh, no, it wasn't the same kids.
That
just
awesome.
Like, it was just like they didn't do so like a dramatic shift in like style and,
it,
and
right,
makeup
it was
or
a
hair.
Very
it was just
poorly...
like,
executed montage, I have to say.
Yeah.
It really, because the movie is a big budget movie, but then it seemed like they filmed the whole montage in one room. Okay, you come in, we'll film you with a toy. Now you have a toy. Yeah. Now you have a toy.
Maybe we'll have a clock spinning.
It was just very
sands through the hourglass.
Shoddy, you know, production wise, you know.
I always think whenever they show Santa's workshop, like how disappointed the kids are going to be. Like, you give somebody like a wooden horse on wheels. Yeah. You give that to your kid,
right?
And see what Christmas morning's
you
like.
Know that, you know what year that worked? Like the old West.
Yeah.
You know, you do that now, and the kid's like, "You out of your mind?"
Yeah, toys, like, there's only like five toys.
Right? Yeah.
There's a doll. There's a wagon. There's a horse.
You think Santa's living a hellish existence?
Yeah.
You give a wooden horse on wheels to
and
your
he does
daughter
this what happens. Every year.
Yeah.
It's like
I was
horse.
Thinking that, like, were the kids really happy with those toys back then? They were.
They have a limited repertoire.
Yeah. So speaking of the repertoire, there is a finally we get to a point where we reach the 20th century and there is a showdown in Santa's workshop between two warring elves, one being Dudley Moore, one being the other guy.
Well, yeah, Santa apparently isn't up to the job anymore.
Yeah,
it's Dudley Moore is Patch.
Patch. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So
and
Patch,
the other elf is Puffy, who in the sequel would have become P. Diddy.
I thought David Huddleston was kind of Puffy.
So Puffy and Patch have this, they like almost like John Henry-esque kind of thing where they both make machines to make toys the fastest. And Patch wins by making broken toys. Like his machine starts to fall. Yeah, there is no quality control. It works for a while and they pick up speed and like the screws don't fit and nothing is going together.
Of course, nobody noticed that. Like there's just like screws falling on the line.
Well, they've never needed quality control before.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So if I were them, Santa, I would have gone to Burgess Meredith and I would have said, isn't all this supposed to be magic? Why don't we have, like, have these assembly lines?
Right. This is
why
the dumbest
can't
thing
we just,
I've ever
like,
heard.
Magically make all these toys.
Yeah, they can relinquish a couple of the beard holders and they can chip in.
I can blink and fly up a chimney and I got to hire Patch to make a assembly line.
So what I wanted to know was while they had all these machines building all these toys, what the hell were all the elves doing? Like just sitting back? Or
he was going to put elves out of work.
Yeah.
And where was Mrs. Santa?
That's exactly right. Got to repopulate the workforce.
Ho, ho, ho.
Touché. Like the thing is like him kicking like the kid's face like off.
They had a lot of scenes where the elves go up on her. But you know, we have to learn to love.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
She always was wearing a really long skirt where you couldn't tell what was going on under there.
There's a reason, yeah. So Patch wins and they, you know, he makes like a billion toys and Santa delivers them. In the process of delivering them, he runs into a homeless boy. Who apparently was not stopped by time.
A homeless boy, by the way, who goes to school. Which is,
that's true.
A modern-day urchin.
Yes. It's weird how that was, wasn't it? Named Joe. No, no relation. So, and Santa kind of like...
Well, yeah, it's, you know well, Joe's your...
Is that your family?
You know it's Joe's your first name, right? Like,
seriously? this is the weird scene where I was like, are you going to kidnap this child?
I know. I was like, I think he just abducted this kid.
I think
this kid's up for grabs.
I think he just committed a federal offense.
Santa can no longer deliver toys within 1,000 feet of a school.
That was when they started the Santa alert.
That's the reason we track him.
Yeah, that's why Norad's tracking him. Yeah.
Just to be safe. We don't want to do
it. And I thought it was interesting that we see Joe... kind of lamenting that he can't get his hands on a Big Mac. And we see that scene in McDonald's
that
where he's starving.
Scene is weird.
And it's like, did McDonald's sign off on this?
Yeah,
McDonald's
like,
loved by
McDonald's
starving children. McDonald's and Coke.
And Pabst Blue Ribbon.
That was the weird one.
What the hell?
That was the thing. And I know that product placement is a total thing. But you shouldn't be surprised by it. But in this
was
particular
one of,
movie, it seemed... particularly garish and
weird
and off.
Yeah, it wasn't even part of the art direction.
Yeah.
It didn't fit. Like, at least go, you know, a more antique Coke bottle or
something. No, it was like a new Coke
can. It's supposedly a story about, like, the spirit of Christmas and the spirit of giving, and then there's this blatant corporate, corporatism in it.
And really, I think McDonald's did Happy Meals around it. Like,
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. This was not just
It could be any worse than Batman blowing up somebody's balls, and they did toys for that one.
In Batman Returns,
they did toys, and it was like, people were like, you're doing toys for this movie?
Because
it was so messed up.
Because of the success of the first movie, McDonald's signed a deal, they're like, a licensing deal for all the Happy Meal toys, and not thinking that Tim Burton was going to go darker.
Because the first movie was through Taco Bell.
Yeah, yes, I remember correct. That. Yes, that is
and,
right.
And when, you know, it was too late and all the toys were manufactured, and then they were like, then they decided to see the movie.
And then Batman shoves a bomb in a guy's pants and is like, yeah, you're fine.
Well, and Catwoman.
Catwoman. And
was a bit different than what they were expecting.
And signed a Penguins
promotional
with
deal with a vasectomy office.
He did. That was for that guy. Just that one guy. Yeah. So he, like, we're introduced to Joe, who, like we said, is the homeless kid.
And not related to you.
Not related to me.
Just to clarify.
Just to be clear.
I just want to put that out
there. I know people were confused.
They were confused. A hungry kid.
Hungry.
And then he does, like, the creepy, like, he's standing off in the distance, like,
A lot.
And, like, giving that creepy smile to the little girl.
Yeah, Joe comes up. Joe shows up in the window a lot.
He's watching that little girl
a lot. He's always in the window.
And that little girl's, like, the little girl also is standing at the window just looking at him. And I was like, can you guys stop? Whatever this is, just stop. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't want to see this anymore.
I don't need a prepubescent love story
attached
to my McDonald's
and
commercial.
And they did it anyway.
And plus, like, when Santa says to him, yeah, I would totally tap that.
Yeah.
Inappropriate.
It was even worse.
Like, you know, I can turn off time, so just give me the word, Joe.
These stockings are ripped for your pleasure.
Don't even want to tell you about the deleted scene with the candy canes.
What's wrong with you, Kevin? Golly.
Dance number.
That's so gross.
Dance number.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So inappropriate. So, like, they're eating the girl, Constance, was that her name?
I forget.
Perfect.
I right.
The redhead. The redheaded girl. How about that?
Pippi? I don't know.
There's no other girl in the movie, so we can just say, we can just reduce her to her girl.
Yeah, there's Pippi, and then there's, like, Mrs. Hathaway, who I don't know, is that her mom or some lady?
I thought it was her aunt.
Oh, because, it was her aunt,
because the character that we see later is her, like, cousin?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Her name was Cornelia.
Cornelia. Okay. Wow. Oh. Okay.
Very close.
Yeah.
The girl that didn't get the role for Annie.
Yes. So she slips him a Thanksgiving or a Christmas dinner, and then he is abducted by Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And they go on a crazy zany adventure where he's delivering presents and
trying to do backflips in the sled.
That's a plot point, though.
Yeah,
that's a very important part
that means nothing.
I'm like, geez, they're trying to do that backflip an awful lot. What is this, three times and they haven't gotten it yet? I wonder if they'll ever pull that off.
This will play no role in the movie.
No, not at all.
So he takes this little kid around the entire world, which who knows how long that takes.
But time stops.
I know, but so, like, he's just...
I think the lesson here is that it's okay to abduct children as long as they're orphans.
Oh.
And hungry. Well, if they're, I'm just assuming they're going to be hungry if their child, if their parent was orphaned.
So Santa was the first person to traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's going to be anybody. I mean, you may as well be Santa Claus, you know?
Well, and then later that kid gets just accepted by the girl, and they keep him in their house.
That's what I was, like, going to bring up. So he takes him around with him all night, which who knows how long that lasts. And then when they get to that house, and Santa's like, "Oh, you two know each other?" And he's like, "Why don't you just stay here in this house uninvited? I'm going to take off now." Yeah, yeah. Like,
all right, man, see you later. Good luck.
Like, well, he knows who's naughty and nice, so he knows that he's safe.
Well,
he doesn't. He knows the exact opposite.
Because the villain of the movie lives in the basement.
Oh, and by the way, that's when the movie got interesting. An hour in, Lithgow shows up
and it just chews the scenery to shreds.
There's one scene where he's, like, eating candy, and I'm like, he's literally chewing the scenery.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's awesome.
He's playing the same role he did in Buckaroo Banzai.
Yes, he is. That's exactly what I thought.
And you can tell he's having fun.
He's having a lot of fun.
And if the rest of the cast had just come up to some level of...
energy,
like, any kind of energy.
He
kind of
does. He kind of breathes some life into it.
He does. He does.
Yeah. They didn't tell him that it wasn't a period piece because he's playing the character as a 1920s villain. But
yes, he's got spats.
And a big fur coat.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. So John Lithgow plays BZ, the owner of this toy company who makes the worst toys ever created.
I like when you're introduced to him in the like Supreme Court hearing or whatever it was, the Senate hearing, and the toys like. Just teddy bear, the head just falls off, and nails are falling out of it.
Nails and glass.
It was just so ridiculous. So I'm like,
it was like
I wish I wish it had been the Dan Aykroyd character from SNL. Bag of glass. So you, the kids love it.
That is one of my favorite skits of all time.
Yeah. When they set fire to the doll, though, it's like, well, okay, a lot of things burn when you set fire to
them. He goes, yeah, kids shouldn't smoke.
Yeah, that was a good response. I like that.
Of course.
That's why today we let kids vape.
Yeah, well, it's a lot safer.
It's healthier.
It yeah. At least that's what they tell us.
This week.
This week. So you're like, oh, by the way, it's connected to 42 different kinds of cancer. So it's pretty obvious that BZ is going to lose everything. In the meantime, all of Santa's toys have been returned because they're breaking.
How do you return a toy to Santa?
You throw them, apparently. So
I was just trying to figure out the logistics of this.
You throw them in the air, and they fall down a chimney.
Yeah, they fall down his chimney.
When they all fell,
you're going with that.
And they were breaking, I'm like, did a shelf just break? I didn't understand physically how that was happening.
The same thing is with writing him letter. You just put it on your table, and it flies. Flies off. Yeah. That part was a little implausible.
Santa implausible.
Yeah.
Sorry. They can't all
file
be gold.
That's okay. That's we filed. Can cut that one.
But we never do.
We
can, but we never do.
We could.
So they, Santa, they're like, I've never had toys returned ever. And we're like, yeah, because it's stupid.
Because nobody knows how.
Yeah. Surprise. It's like four families are like, no, you just throw it.
There's been generations of kids trying to return wagons.
There's one girl who's 15 who's like, I've gotten this goddamn horse every year for 15 years.
Say, at first it's cute, but when you're 23 and you're getting a horse, it's like, what are you
doing? In Santa's defense.
Yeah.
These were free. So they don't work, but you're the asshole returning a free press room.
And it's amazing how there is a Santa Claus, and yet poor kids still don't get anything.
Yeah. They get a weird model Dudley Moore. I don't know what that thing was.
I don't even know what it was.
Was it Dudley Moore riding a reindeer? That thing that he whittles?
Oh, the thing Joe got?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I were Joe, I'd be like, man, I just want a cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah. He whittled like a,
Santa was whittling that, right?
Yeah. Here's a bust of my exiled elf.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, boy. This won't come into play at all later.
So, BZ and Patch team up.
So, Patch leaves in disgrace because he has destroyed, what he believes he has destroyed Christmas. So he comes to...
Which is true.
It is true. He was over. He destroyed it because of his
technically,
shoddy...
Burgess Meredith destroyed Christmas at this point, but okay.
I think the Selkins destroyed Christmas.
Along with Superman, which we'll see later as incarnations. So he goes down to Earth and he lands right in front of BZ Toys, and all of his toys are
flying off the shelves.
Being pulled off the shelves. He's like, oh, wow, he must be really popular because they're all leaving. So he goes in and he lays his plot out for BZ, and BZ being the
opportunist
that he is, takes Patch under his wing and starts. What's the toy that they make the first time? Is it the lollipop?
Lollipop, yeah.
So Patch somehow owns or created this.
Like fairy
feed?
Dust or something.
I was like magical oats that he feeds the reindeer and they're able to fly.
He's getting them high.
A lollipop isn't a toy either.
Right.
That was like a very weird thing.
I don't know. I saw this movie one time.
All right. I'm just,
easy.
Saying I saw a movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Where there was a lollipop.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of a toy.
But yeah, I thought the same thing. The toy factory is trying to find its big comeback toy to win everybody back, and
lollipop.
It's a lollipop.
Yeah, may know, because even if you're a kid, you're like, okay, lollipop, cool. Now where's my f***ing toy?
Don't tell me it's that horse.
Yeah. I swear to Christ, Mom, if it's that goddamn horse, if it's that stinking doll.
No, you got the wagon this year. I've
gotten five wagons in the last 5 years.
Well, you need a wagon for the horses to pull.
Yeah, you got to pull them up and take them back to return them to Santa Claus. Yeah.
So, and this is another thing where it's like, I feel like the Salkins, they did Superman in 78 and then Superman 2 was 81.
Well, 81, I believe.
And yeah. I feel like they never got out of the idea that, like, hey, we can make people fly.
Yeah.
We can do that. Yes. Like, we did it twice already.
Huh? I will say the flying scenes were good.
They were fine.
Yeah. Like, I, you know what I really, really liked? The one scene I really, it's probably 3/10 of a second.
The last thing where they tell you all the credits of everybody, all the producer credits and everything. That's my favorite.
Yeah. I like seeing the real reindeer pull that sleigh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
that
he's
cool.
going down the hallway. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a hallway, whatever the you would call
the
that.
Set, like a ramp?
Yeah. I don't know. A runway?
Runway? Yeah. That'll work.
Yeah. So
they're running. That counts.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And you actually see real reindeer. I'm sure PETA was incensed, but it was just really cool to see real live reindeer pulling mm-hmm. that sleigh.
Now, a scene later, you get creepy animatronic then, reindeer.
Right. Yeah.
Those are gone.
Yeah.
They got those reindeer for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, this is all we can afford.
Have you ever worked with reindeer? They're very temperamental.
Are they?
Yes. Well, and apparently 6 reindeer are just as efficient as how many they're supposed
eight.
To be?
Eight
reindeer.
So that's going to be my other question. Is there a rule against using Rudolph?
Yes, Rudolph is actually owned by, was it a department store?
Yeah.
Didn't the department store create that? Have that character created by an ad agency?
Whoever, someone else owns the right.
Yeah,
you can't just put him in a movie.
Yeah, all the other Santa mythos is in the public domain. Yeah, but
so is Rudolph not canon?
No. He's Rudolph not, didn't come around until, like, what, 1952 or something?
Oh, for the song.
Yeah, right. For the song. He was created for the song.
Right.
And
by a department store, right?
By a department store, yeah.
And that song was, like, the biggest selling hit
of all time.
Yeah,
of all time. For years, it was the biggest selling record of all time.
I thought it was White Christmas that was the biggest selling of all
time. That, too. Yeah. But Rudolph was. But the reindeers... And I may be wrong about this, but Donner and Blitzen, and that comes from the poem, right?
Right.
The Night Before Christmas, yeah. which I'm sure is public domain.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
now.
And I think he took a lot of that from folklore
yeah.
and kind of consolidated it into one
yeah.
spot, you know?
Interesting. So I'm
going to put this, I'm going to translate this for Joe. He retconned it.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. I'm with you. Yeah. I am. Did you a comic nerd, so like if you have to use the right terminology.
Right,
you
we just
like,
got
uh-huh.
What is yep. that term? What is that?
Retroactive continuity.
Correct. So let's say in the comic books, Superman pre-1985 reboot could take two planets and smash them together. So in 1985, DC retconned the entire character to depower him. So he couldn't smash two planets together. And they you change stuff in a character's history. So Jason Todd, the second Robin, never died. Like, he's back.
Yeah, they
when you're saying the first Robin died at some point?
Dick Grayson is still... No, every Robin you've ever known is still alive.
Oh, okay.
But Robin number two...
There was a second Robin, and they killed him off.
Oh.
And then they retconned him
and
back into
him
existence. Back. So it's a way of changing an aspect of your continuity without... Changing your
everything.
Entire continuity.
Right.
Correct.
It's Patrick Duffy in the shower.
Science, we've been retconned.
Oh, yes, that's right.
That's true.
Yes.
I don't know. That's all right.
he said that off mic for a reason.
So did you guys notice? I mean, I have to feel that they were doing this on purpose, but when one of the reindeer was sick, they had a thermometer and it like lit up right where the nose would
oh,
be like
it?
There's a ball
yeah.
like it so I thought it was like a Rudolph thing
like a little nod.
The thermometer went it like
that
lit up from the base and then it got to the top the ball and it
that was
glowed
that,
red.
That's pre-fanboy pandering that's what that
yeah
is.
It's
yeah.
just weird that it was hanging out the reindeer's ass but
yeah,
I mean,
well, yeah
totally was what you're thinking
those elves get lonely
it's a long winter.
My wife showed me that Rudolph was created for Montgomery Ward.
Uh-huh. Right, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Crystal.
Johnny Marks, right? Is that the guy who wrote the song?
Yes.
I don't know. She's got it up on Wikipedia.
Johnny Marks and Gene Autry.
Gene Autry sang it, right?
Yeah, but Johnny Marks was the writer.
Yeah.
So Santa is now trying to have to play catch up because the Christmas spirit is starting to disappear, much like in the movie we reviewed last week.
Well, probably also because
it's
no
December
longer,
27th.
That's no longer Christmas.
That's a good point. Yeah.
People
are quickly returning
their toys.
He's got some
time.
Yeah.
Well, that's
like
a whole kind of another thing about the movie that doesn't pay off. There's like kind of a whole plot of Santa loses his faith or whatever. Santa becomes really depressed because of Patch, but that never they never really develop that at all.
He has a crisis of faith. That's weird.
Isn't that weird how that works?
Yeah.
It sounded like we saw Santa when he was a baby.
It's like the Muppets
and
lied to
us. He was 33. Like we didn't at least they didn't go that far with
right.
it. Right. so Patch, they create this, and it's super popular, and John Lithgow's character, who like was just the only thing that I could enjoy, just because he was having a blast with every possible scene he was in, decides, he's like, okay, we have to go bigger. Like, we have this, it's going to sell like crazy. We need to go bigger. He's like, can you do this again? And he was like,
Christmas isn't for another year.
I think I can do it again. And then, like, there's a lot that I don't remember about this part.
But he says, I want it in 3 months. And then he's like, Christmas is in another year. And he goes, wait a minute, Christmas, the sequel.
You know? So here's the scary part. Like, something tells me that may not be too far off in 2015. Where they're just like, I mean, we have it once, right?
Right.
They're like, yeah, let's just do it another 6 months. Right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they could get away with it. They would.
Like having a Christmas too.
Yeah, right. With Black Friday sales.
I think the only moment where I feel like Dudley Moore kind of really got to be Dudley Moore was on his reaction to when he says Christmas 2. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember what he says, but he's just got this look where he's just like, what? Like, he's like,
you're out of your mind.
Yeah, he's like, that's crazy.
And this is also where we find out that the cousin, this little girl who befriends Santa and Joe, her second cousin, is John Lithgow, and
he's the villain
of this entire movie.
Yeah, that wasn't really like a plot twist, but they really set it up like it was.
Well, like
the big reveal.
Yeah, he spun around in a chair and he was there.
Right. Yeah,
like he almost said ta-da.
Yeah,
he almost literally just went dun, dun, dun.
It's me.
Yep, there you are.
So they Patch starts to work on a new plan. For something that I don't remember what he was making.
Gonna be a candy cane.
Candy canes.
Which again, are not toys.
Not toys.
Except for this other movie I saw. It was a sequel to the lollipop movie.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder why this toy company is having issues with.
Well, and then like he's got this magic dust that
will
make.
But
like,
it's in like a weird mason jar.
What?
Yeah.
He just adds scoops of it.
He's like. Yeah, about a fourth of a teaspoon.
That's very inconsistent, too, because obviously in the North Pole they have a lot of magic dust or whatever, you know.
Just laying around.
That can make them travel or whatever, but they never use it on toys, right?
Right. At least in this movie, you have to have machines make the toys.
You never get a magic toy from Santa, so it's...
Yeah. We've been getting ripped off all these years.
Yeah. That son of a bee.
Yeah.
Son of a bee.
It's just like he's got this magic dust that he's going to let kids ingest.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Like, you can tell it's the Reagan era. Where's the FDA? Deregulated.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, what, you can't do this.
This stuff that may or may not harm you at all, now just give it to the kids. They'll be fine. What's the worst that could happen?
Sure.
Oh, they could fly away into the atmosphere.
Yeah. Oh, there are days when I'll take that deal, my friend.
Dinner time.
So, this is where I think Joe... Are we back at Crit? No. When does Joe figure out the plot?
Because the screenwriters haven't.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, there's a lot of coincidental, like, overhearing of things.
That's what it is. Okay. So Joe kind of hears the plot, and he busts in like he's going to do something, and then they end up kidnapping Joe. And I was like, this poor kid can't catch a break. Like, first he gets kidnapped by Santa Claus. Now he's getting kidnapped again by the villain. You should just stay outside. Like, you feel like you've been better off on your own this entire time.
I think this is the point in the movie where there's this montage where you're seeing people on the street and there's a kid looking in a window.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to point this out. I don't know if it doesn't really affect the movie in any way. But and you can go back and look. It's about two-thirds of the way through the movie. There's a kid looking in the window. And behind him, for no reason that I can figure out whatsoever, is the A-Team van. Did anybody else know this?
Yes.
No. Yes, exactly. I saw that and went, why do I know that van?
I'm like, why is the A-Team van
here? It's the black van with
the
stripe.
With the red stripe? Yes. I swear to God.
Yes.
The A-Team van just parked on the street.
It's another piece of fan service.
I don't know.
It had to be.
The A-Team van.
What year was that show 80, on?
Well,
I would have been happy with that. Like, they could have turned this thing around.
Face and all those guys
you
show
bring
up.
In Mr. T.
Yeah.
What year was that show on, though?
Never saw it coming.
Pity the fools who are watching this movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's like, look, we're really sorry about this. We'll take care of this right now.
We apologize. It was early 80s, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Ooh. They parked the van and they ran away as fast as they could.
Because it's post-Rocky 3.
Yeah.
So it's just Rocky
3
the
that's what made Mr. T famous.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It was Clubber Lang.
So it's just right. The lot that they shot it on. They probably shared the same.
General Lee was over there.
I don't think so.
The Batmobile was on the other side.
I think it was filmed at Pinewood Studios in England.
Yeah.
And this movie was filmed in England?
I believe it was, yeah. And I don't think that the A-Team was filmed in England.
You don't think
yeah.
so? It's just a theory.
The A-Team started in 83.
Okay. What year was Rocky III? Out of curiosity.
82, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's a year before.
Okay.
Rocky.
So I'm saying,
how do you spell two?
Why would they?
You mean three?
I was there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Is that the one where he joins the Navy?
Yeah.
It's 82.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Creed 2 is where he fights Clubber Lang's kid.
Take my money
right now. I don't even care. So good.
Kickstarter that movie.
Yeah. And 3 is where he fights Ivan Drago's kid. No, he's gonna keep going. Tommy Gunn's kids.
Don't go see
one.
4 because he fights Tommy Gunn's
Tommy
kid.
Gunn's
you don't want to do that. Yeah. Okay, back to this movie so we can get to the end.
So they kidnap the kid, and does something burn? There's a factory burned down because of
the explosive. The candy canes they found out were like if they have a radiator, it would heat up the candy canes and they would explode.
Okay, so they burned down a factory,
and then I think John Lithgow says, "Well, it's not my fault they have radiators." It's just his lines are classic.
He's so good in this movie. He's the bright spot of this entire movie because he's just so cheesy.
Where was he at in his career at this point? Because I don't remember seeing
this
him.
Was very sharp, early. It was right? He had just done Terms of Endearment and The World According to Garp. So he was just, I think, or he'd been around for a few years. Mm-hmm. He was in All That Jazz, I remember.
Body Double?
Huh?
Or not Body Double.
Body Heat?
No, God, De Palma.
Body Heat.
Blow Up.
Blow out.
Footloose.
So I think he was like Footloose. Just...
He was the preacher.
Know, he was Footloose. Like known already by that point as a really good character actor. He was very in demand.
When did he start developing like the comedic chops?
Well, in this movie, for one thing, you know.
Okay. So Dudley Moore, somehow he builds like a car, like a flying car?
Yeah. Well, it's like his version of Santa's sleigh.
Yeah.
It's just got to be all tricked out and bitching.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
They had some budget.
Right. They had like... A little bit left.
Spend before right. the end of the
fiscal. We didn't have Nutcracker.
We didn't spend all of Gene Hackman's paycheck
the fiscal
Superman
end
2,
was coming
so.
Up and right. you pay your you know what you're budgeted for.
Correct.
Or you don't
so they
the, you don't get it next year.
Then knowing the Salt Kinds again. So they build this car and then Santa somehow finds out that the candy canes will explode. So
he goes, ha!
Yeah, he's like, serves right, Patch, for trying to help this guy, you douche. So Patch realizes that Santa still cares because Joe has the weird whittled down figurine with Patch's face on it. And he decides to go ahead and go back to the North Pole in his super souped up hot rod containing all of the candy canes.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa comes after him because now he knows the plot. And they are on a literally on a collision course
with
each
wackiness.
Other. Wackiness does ensue. Like it does happen. So they're
that's
on.
That's where the super duper looper.
Yeah.
Pays
yeah. Out. There's probably only for one maneuver that you can avoid.
For no apparent reason. I'm like, you know,
well,
if they just jump out the thing.
I was going
to
say,
if you move to the side.
So the Dudley sleigh is about to blow.
Yes.
And they're like, the super duper looper. We have to do it.
Got
to
do
so
it.
And so they go underneath, and I'm like, oh, cool. They could just hop down a sleigh.
Correct.
And to the one that just
you
is
know,
right underneath
you
them.
You know what we're
going to
do?
No.
We're going to do a loop.
We're going to loop around them to show off. And then we're going to let them blow up.
Let them explode.
We'll catch him. It'll be okay.
It'll be fine. Don't
now,
even
now
worry.
Now, this brings up my question about the underpowered reindeer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because aren't they doing this with 6 at this
correct,
point?
Correct. Because Comet and
so
Cupid have the flu.
Comet and Cupid could not help them do the super duper looper prior to this.
Well, maybe they were just
so
dead
they
weight.
Were dead weight.
Maybe yes, they were the yeah. problem.
They were
learned,
the problem.
They were the problem.
They learned and something
now,
about them.
And now, you know, there's no more Comet and Cupid.
And then now
they are delicious.
Those two reindeers are like, oh, you did the super duper looper and we weren't there.
Of all the times for that trick to work. And then I guess the feds raid BZ Toys, is that right?
Yeah.
And then Lithgow eats one of the candy canes and
he's just shoving
away.
He's just shoving candy canes
yeah,
in his
yeah,
mouth.
Yeah, that's where I was like, he's literally chewing the scenery.
Yeah, so he floats off into the atmosphere.
I was hoping you would jump out and just fall.
Like it didn't really work at all.
Yeah,
that is my favorite part of the movie, though, when he's actually, like you said, chewing the scenery.
Yeah.
He's just so gleefully gobbling this
correct.
Thing.
That was the day he found out that the check cleared.
Yeah.
It's like,
this is amazing.
The director comes over and says, Mr. Lithgow, no one else in this movie is acting.
Yeah.
So
know,
if you
could
tone
it down a little bit, that'd be great. So, you know, everybody's happy. Patch returns to Santa's workshop. Santa Claus apparently abducts two children this
They're
time.
They're allowed to stay there for a year.
Yeah, that's okay. Another thing.
So, but what is a year?
Well, that time actually
forever.
Knew.
That time was forward.
So he kidnapped those kids, which, okay, there's the homeless kid. He doesn't have a ton going on, but there's this little girl
who has a family.
But
her family's the villain,
so it doesn't matter.
The aunt wasn't.
But they have, nah.
She's villain by proxy.
Yeah.
Can I stay here for a year? What?
Yeah, they're both like, no. Santa's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm on the North Pole. Nobody's going to come up here anyway. Don't even worry about it. And then the last thing we see is John Lithgow doing his best Christopher Reeve impression, where he flies around the world. John Lithgow just floating off into space.
The candy canes, I'm guessing, enable him not just to fly, but to
breathe in space. Yeah,
not
freeze
to death.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
it's the magic part,
right?
Because him burning to death would have been
just re-entry into the atmosphere would have been. So that there's 1985's Santa Claus.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was something, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just really glad these two guys were here, because otherwise, if you'd have told me to watch this,
you would quit.
I would have been like, you're out of your mind, man.
It's a very kind of run-of-the-mill bad movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
It really is because it never gets loft. It never gets any, you know, everyone flatlines their performance.
It's just a thing where they never got the script right or whatever, and it's all talented. Everyone involved with it is talented, you know.
Yeah,
including the writer and the director and the production design and the music, you know. But it just doesn't work. It's like they, you know.
Well, I was talking to Trace.
Needed another draft that they never did.
Yeah, I was talking to Trace earlier today about the movie, and I was saying, you know, we rip on movies that are bad a lot because it's fun.
It's easy.
But, you know, when you consider how many people go into making a movie and how it can go off the rails for any number of reasons, whether it be bad costumes or bad sets or bad acting or better. When you factor all the moving parts that have to come together just right to make not only a good movie but a great movie, it's amazing we get as many good movies as we do.
And it's amazing. Like, it's always, you know, we talk about we did like Jupiter Ascending, and we've done all of these massive.
This was better than Jupiter Ascending.
Yes.
No dog boys in this one.
Yeah.
With rollerblades. Laser rollerblades, that's easy to say. But like, you know, you see big budget stuff like that and you're like, on what planet did the producers or the Warner Brothers or Sony or Universal be like, yeah, that'll work? Like,
I think at some point they put so much money in there too.
They knew they had a pre-built audience,
and they look at the track record of this
crew.
It
goes back to, everyone quotes it, but it's true. William Goldman saying nobody knows anything, you know, in Hollywood. It's like you can't tell until the final thing is made whether it's going to be any good or not. You know,
What was the Christmas movie prior to this? Were there any? Did this start the whole modern Christmas?
I think Christmas
movie
Story
genre?
Came out a few years before that.
Uh-huh. The only good Christmas movie, by the way.
Oh, It's a Wonderful Life?
No. That's about depression.
Okay,
and suicide.
But Christmas Story, a Christmas Story, right. Gene Shepherd's Christmas Story,
sure, based on an article in Playboy.
Mm-hmm. I just was reading it for the article. Yeah.
Now you can really point to that. That started as an article.
That's all
Playboy.
You can do.
Okay. No, that's true. That's weird.
But yeah, that came out, I think, in 1983.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think it was
Black
a big
Christmas,
hit.
Black Christmas and Porky's were like
Bob Clark's other endeavors.
They did those.
No, it wasn't a hit. It tanked.
Yeah,
Because people really didn't want to see an old timey.
Yeah,
celebration.
I remember seeing it in the theater. I was one of the few people.
Yeah,
it's like a nobody denies that it's a classic. Right.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's in that. I think it's in that top probably five of all time.
Oh,
I think as some people are concerned.
Yeah,
it's no Die Hard, but
well, that's. That's
there it
movie.
Is. There's a Christmas story.
Santa Claus movie.
Santa Claus the movie.
At this point, there can't ever be another reason to watch that again, so I'm glad that's past us.
You don't want my Blu-ray?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
How did it look on your massive TV?
It was terrible. It was even worse because it was like, I can't escape this.
It's surrounding me.
It's even in my peripheral vision.
I texted these guys. I said, I feel like I'm being punished.
You were.
It was just torturous.
Yeah, I was
so
sad. It was rough. Yeah. I was like, oh, you know, it's all kinds. All right, I love two of their movies.
It's like an hour and 47 minutes, and it just felt so much longer.
It did. Like I said, I literally had to watch it in chunks.
Yeah, especially when you split it up over days.
Like, I started watching it Wednesday, and I got about 20 minutes in. I was like, done.
Yeah,
I'm going to need to come back to that later. And then I came back to it later, and I got about through 10 minutes, and I was like,
I will say stamina was getting less.
That first 30 minutes is good, though.
Yeah. Like, I will say, the stuff in the North Pole was actually pretty good.
Like, it was an interesting story. Yeah. I was like, okay, where is this going to go off the rails? I was just waiting for it because I knew it would, and I'm like, this is really good. And I looked, it was like 30 minutes right when the clock hit that. It just...
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, you know, doing an entire movie that's just a Santa origin story might have been a better way to go.
I remember thinking that when I was 15. Like, give me the Santa stuff. I didn't need the rest. Uh-huh.
Instead of the zany plot with an evil toy baron.
They're writing a comic book right now about the origin of Santa Claus. Grant Morrison for Boom Studios, where he's like a Viking.
Okay, so it's going to be a creepy Santa origin.
I don't really know yet.
It's Grant Morrison.
I'm only an issue in, but he's a Viking who shows up in this town, and the town does not do Yuletide anymore. Because the prince of this wants all the toys. Yeah. So, like, this kid picks up a rock, and, like, a guard punches the kid in the face because he has a toy. And Claus kind of starts to step in and smoke some peyote and then creates a bunch
of
toys.
So I was right. Yep, just say I was right. So I guess let's go around the table and everybody can say. I feel weird. We always let people know where to find them. I don't think these guys need help.
Dan, you don't have a video recovery, do you?
Oh, do you have one?
Honestly, I was... the one that came to mind was, if you want to see a better version with a lot of the same creators and creative forces behind this, watch The Three Musketeers, or The Three and Four Musketeers, as they did find
and
out.
And I wonder, too, if Richard Lester had directed this, which maybe they might have approached him about
it. I feel like
it would have been
boy.
Like a whole different movie, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe not that good, but better for sure.
Those were more like what they would call a romp.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you put Richard Lester together with British comedy people, he's like so in tune. Even like A Hard Day's Night is very influenced by the Goon Show and stuff like that.
Oh, and The Bed Sitting Room. It would have been more absurd. It needed some comedy element.
Right. Richard Lester, I think, was very hot, but he was directing a lot of movies. I don't think he was available to do it.
That was the weird, like, you'd get those weird comedic beats in Superman, in his version of Superman 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of like, what happened? Where do we go? I don't know what it is.
So this was the director of Supergirl.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, also
right off of Supergirl.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense.
The studio apparently loved Supergirl, and the studio said it was a masterpiece, and they put him right to the work on this movie.
Wow.
Before Supergirl came out, because they loved it so much.
And Supergirl was awful. Helen Slater was great. That movie's awful.
Yeah.
TV show.
Annette O'Toole is in that, right?
Yeah. Annette O'Toole's in Superman.
Lana Lang. And she was in 3.
She was in 3, and then she came back and played Martha Kent on Smallville.
Yeah.
When she
yeah.
came in for the role, they were talking, and she's like, you know, I've been in one of these movies before.
Yeah.
And the producers, were like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, I was Lana Lang in Superman 3. They're like, you're hired. That's the true story. That's how she got the job from Martha Kent. Yeah.
So there you go. Back to the part where I was wrapping the show up.
Back to that.
So we'll go around and people can everybody know where to find them, and you guys feel free to push whatever you want to push, and we'll start here and work our way around.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Trace Beaulieu. You can find me on Twitter under my name or Facebook under my name. Don't be afraid of the vowels. and Frank Conniff and I are touring around as the Mads, doing live movie riffing, and you can find out more about us on themadsareback.com and also the Mads Are Back Facebook page and any other place you think you might find us.
And you can find me at Frank Conniff on Twitter, on Facebook, and the Mads Are Back Facebook page and the website, and also all my stuff you can learn about at Frank Conniff. .com where you can has links to my podcast Podhouse 90, which is original radio plays that I write and produce and direct, and also I'm on the radio every day on Sirius XM channel 121, Tell Me Everything with John Fugelsang. I'm his wacky sidekick. So,
can I put in my credit that I listen to you on John's show every day? I'm the guy listening.
Yeah, Trace and truckers.
Yeah,
we have a lot. Sirius XM is nothing but truckers who will subscribe to it. That's the audience.
That's funny. This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts BUTTS 21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you would like to continue the conversation online, chime in about this really weird Christmas movie. We will be there waiting for you at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. If you would like to email the show, you can do that at RealSpoilers@ReviewSTL.com. And you can find us on iTunes. While you're there, rate and review us. And subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. It helps. So anyway, we're on iTunes or wherever finer podcasts are sold. And by sold, we mean, of course,
given away for free.
Given away for free. So thanks for listening. And until next time, Hobson dies.
I think it's kind of hot to be wearing these scarves.
Oh, yeah. Well, the scarves are a must. You can't go caroling without a scarf. Catch your death.
Man, you were like one of those kids I remember in high school that used to sell the most candy bars for the marching band.
Yeah, and you'd be president of the swing choir, too.
Definitely. Thanks, Joe Robinson. Thanks, Tom Servo.
What a kiss up this guy.
Okay, now, if you'll all look at your sheet music, we can rehearse my new song.
You wrote a Christmas song?
Hey, there's no tradition like a new tradition.
Wait a minute. Let's have a Patrick Swayze Christmas?
Yeah, based on my favorite movie, Roadhouse.
Come on, what the heck does Patrick Swayze have to do with Christmas?
Hey, you keep Christmas in your way and let me keep it in mine, okay?
Jeez.
Come on, sir. It seems like a nice enough sentiment. We can give it a shot. Come on.
All right, okay, okay. 12-8 time, key of A-flat major.
Oh, good.
Cambod, shoot him the tune. Okay, you'll just have to stay with me, everybody, okay? Your parts are written out. Let's have a Patrick Swayze Christmas. By Crow T-Robot.
Paul, let's have a Patrick Swayze Christmas.
Right. Hit it, Cambot.
Oh, I start. I get it.
I'm sorry.
Okay, pick it up. Open up your heart and let the Patrick Swayze Christmas in.
We'll gather at the roadhouse with our next of kin.
Not bad.
And Santa can be our regular Saturday night thing.
We'll decorate a bar stool and gather round and sing.
Oh, let's have a Patrick Swayze Christmas this year.
Or we'll tear your throat out and kick you in the ear.
Hold it, Cambot, stop it. Crow, I don't know if I think this is an appropriate sentiment anymore for Christmas.
Hey, what, like a good action sequence don't belong at Christmas?
Well, no, it's just that I've never heard of an action sequence in a Christmas carol before.
Yeah.
Well, then grab hold of your socks and read on, Joel Robinson.
Okay, pick it up from measure 20, Cambot. Lovely intro, though, very tasteful.
Thank you.
It's my way or the highway this Christmas at my bar.
I'll have to smash your kneecaps if you bastards touch my car.
I got the word that Santa has been stealing from the till.
I think that right jolly old elf better make out his will. Oh, let's have a Patrick Swayze Christmas, one and all. And this can be the haziest. This can be the laziest. This can be the Swayziest Christmas of them all.
La, 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 la. How long before it becomes a standard?
I think you gotta come with me. Come on.
We'll be right back. Save a leg for me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.